Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 174 of Geek Town Radio. Back this week, I'm your host Dave, and I have with me Matt. It's Han. How you doing?
Hey David, how you doing?
I'm all right, how are you?
I was ill over the weekend. I still have got some of it left, and I've got an ulcer, so...
Brilliant! Going well then.
Kind of happened at the same time, but I'm feeling weirdly better on a Monday, which is...
Yes.
Usually what happens, but that's what I've been dealing with.
Good. So what have you been doing? I know what one game you've been playing, because I've been playing it incessantly as well.
Yeah, we've got a couple of similar things on here.
Yeah.
But I'll talk about the ones that I've got individually. I remember, was it Gray last week talked about Paradise PD?
Oh, yeah.
I finished the first season, and it's kind of like if you took the craziness from Rick and Morty and made it like South Park-esque, but then had it set in like a police station.
Okay.
So it's like crazy and like over the top rude, and it has like police cases in it. It also has the talking dog. So
you can't go wrong with a talking dog.
A piece from Family Guy, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the characters are always like, you know, drugs and drinking, and more specifically, the dog does that because he's the sniffer dog.
Yes, I was going to say I could see where they're going with that. Yeah,
and they make some jokes out of that. It was good. I could see how it could improve with the season two, because sometimes you have to do that with a new show if something's in season one.
Yeah, they find their feet a bit.
You have to, like, you know, give it the feedback or whatever from things they could do better or worse, and then you could come back with a stronger second season. But I liked it overall. It's nice and short as well. It's one of them sort of, I think, 10-episode, 30-minute comedies.
Yeah.
The season finale itself was really, really good. They actually went into a bit more story, because there is a couple of episodes in there that are just plain, like, crazy and stuff and don't really contribute to the plot as much.
Yeah.
But they sort of started off with something and then dropped it a little bit and then brought it back, and then they sort of concluded. So I'll see what they do with the second season. But it was all right. It was a nice sort of fun, crazy sort of thing to watch. So
yes,
that was okay.
I will go and watch that at some point, because it looked interesting and it's on my list. I just haven't got to it yet.
I've only seen about half of the first episode of Iron Fist season two.
Right.
So I haven't got too much to say there, but I was happy with what I saw so far.
Yeah.
I didn't have as many problems with the first season as what some other people did. But if from what I hear that it's a lot better with the second season, then... cool, fair enough. But no, I'm still interested in the world and the characters and what they seem to be doing from the start, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, the second season for me, because I've now finished the second season, it's only 10 episodes, it's not 13 this time around,
which
I think has helped it, actually. It's well put together, it's definitely better than the first season. I'm kind of like you, I didn't have as many problems with that first season as some people did. Starts off a little slow, but it does pick up, and things like the fight sequences, it infinitely better than they were the first time round. So they've managed to sort that out. The storyline, I think, is better. Leaves it in a very interesting place as well. I won't go into that, obviously, because I know people are still watching it. But it does leave things in a very interesting place at the end. So, I'm intrigued to see what they do with the third season. It's weird. The final episode almost ends halfway through. Because if you know anything about how they write kind of movies and TV shows, you sort of have, you know, act one, act two, act three, act four, whatever it is, five acts, and then you have a sort of coda at the end, which is where they sort of, the story's kind of finished, but they're wrapping things up. And almost the last sort of half of that final episode is a coda, which is sort of wrapping things up and setting things up for the third season. So okay. There's half an hour of that. I thought that was kind of interesting. They did a really good job with it, though. I think it's vastly superior to the first one. And like I say, I didn't have that many problems with the first one either. So
I didn't write it down here, but I'll quickly talk about it. BoJack Horseman season 5, I started yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm about just over halfway through the season because I watched quite a bit yesterday. I really like what they've taken from season 4 and actually put into this season and like built off of it with new things as well. And just kind of what they're doing with BoJack and having him interact with some new characters and how they're kind of fitting in with old characters as well. And like one of the series original characters, I think her name is Diane, like what she's going through, and it all sort of connects together a bit more than what sort of some of the older seasons tended to do.
Yeah.
I like what they're doing so far, and I can see it going in a good direction. Of course, I don't know that for certain. I haven't finished the season, but I'm quite impressed with what they've managed to do so far. And it's a bit more based around BoJack actually getting into doing TV, right, which was kind of the origin story of the character, because he used to do the show called Horse and Around. And now he's getting back into TV with new and old characters. So I'm impressed with what they're doing with that so far.
Good.
The other last two things I have, two films. First one, The Spy Who Dumped Me, is about two characters played by Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon.
Yes.
And they essentially get wrapped up in a spy plot. They're not spies themselves, hence, you know,
yes,
the person who dumped her is the spy and he's involved with that. And then he gets them involved. And the spy itself is played by Justin Roiland of The Leftovers, Kevin Garvey.
Okay.
So it was, I didn't know he was in the film to begin with. I didn't really pay attention to casting and that sort of thing. So he was a nice sort of third addition, because I knew the two girls were going to be in it, obviously.
Yeah.
But he was a nice kind of addition as well. And yeah, it's just kind of a buddy team up. You can't really call it a cop or a spy team up, because they're not those things. It's more of just a female comedy team up film. The bad thing is that I had the whole cinema to myself. So it looks like the film isn't doing quite so well, which is a shame, because it ended in an interesting way where like you could end it there or you could make another one, and I'd like another one just, you know, for more fun stuff from those two characters. But they did a very good job with it, and what I was going into the film for, which was the chemistry between the two and how they deal with the situations they're in, played out very well as well. So I was happy with that, but I'm one of the few people that apparently was. So see how the film gets on. And then the last thing from my side is called Searching. It's basically, and this is totally different category of film, is much more serious and intense and stuff, and there were people in the cinema for this one as well. Basically about this father, his daughter goes missing, and he has to, without spoiling much, I'll basically just say that he has to find her, and things get very intense, and it uses found footage, film, and like laptop screen capture footage.
Okay.
And there's one of the really impressive things they do with the film is when the dad's, because the dad of course is doing everything he can, like searching through Skype and Facebook and Instagram and Google Maps and cameras that he can find and the police and what they can provide. So he's using all of his resources available, and it does do a good job of tying that into like modern tech.
Yeah.
And tying Instagram profiles to other Facebook profiles and that sort of thing. But what they do really well is like when they show you a particular reveal, the dad, because you assume that's the dad looking on the computer, they'll kind of literally stop for a minute, and then you'll know at that point, you'll be like, okay, I'm being shown something here, some sort of reveal, and then they'll play like a slow bit of music, and then you see the reveal yourself. Nothing is like said or anything until the father reacts afterward, like depending on what the situation is.
Yeah.
And then there's certain bits later on in the film, of course I won't spoil anything, where like you see some photos and some things that are side by side that help reveal with something else. It is really, really good with the tools it has and what it tries to do. But yeah, the most powerful thing I'm trying to get at that it has is just pausing for a minute or two and letting you sort of figure something out. And then once you have, you think, oh my God, I can't believe that just got revealed. So very good job they did with that. Yeah, I was very happy.
I've not seen it. It's probably one I'll catch when it comes to you know, home video and stuff. But it does look kind of interesting, sort of the entire thing shot sort of from the point of view of the computer screens and the smartphones and that sort of stuff. It's a really interesting idea. John Cho and Deborah Messing are the two stars on that.
Okay. But yeah, it's one of them things where like, don't look at your phone when you're when you're watching this. You've really got to like, especially with like smaller reveals that are not quite as big as some of the other ones.
Yeah.
You've got to pay attention, otherwise you'll lose the plot a little bit. So yeah, really good. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah. So for me, I mean, Iron Fist, we talked about. Atypical is the other thing on Netflix that I've been watching, which I know you've been watching as well. I'm not that far into it. I'm only a few episodes in at this point.
So we're the opposite with that. I finished the season.
Yeah. Well, I watched Iron Fist first and then sort of went on to Atypical afterwards. And then I've got to go on to Ozark, which I haven't finished watching yet. But
I'm still in the first season. So much TV, so much option. It's
lot of stuff kind of dumped onto Netflix at the same time. So, but I'm loving Atypical. It's a really good second season.
Yeah,
it's really good. They kind of move things on. The lead's kind of growing up, but not really growing up, and he's sort of having to deal with change and choices,
and
his parents are being separated, and this possibility that he's going to go off to college. And so there's a lot of things that are sort of starting to come up, and it's just wonderfully written. They play it so well, and it's just really interesting, funny, well-written thing about a kid with autism and how he's sort of dealing with his life. But it's so well done.
I think one of the strengths of this second season is the way they literally not separate the characters but put them on new paths and different paths, which does kind of separate them. But then when like family stuff comes up, how it all kind of still manages to connect together again.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, you know, because they were very much a family unit in the first one, and then in this one they are still a family unit, but you know, the mum is in one place, the dad is in another place, the sister's at a different school. So they've split everybody up. So it's kind of interesting to see what they're doing with that. But it's honestly a great, great comedy. If you've not watched it yet, go watch Atypical. It's absolutely superb.
Have they renewed it yet? I haven't heard
about a renewal yet, but I imagine it will get renewed. It's one of those shows that seems to have been critically going down very well for them. So I think it's likely to get renewed, even though we haven't heard anything yet. Another new show this week, Future Man, which is running on Sci-Fi over here. This is this comedy sci-fi series, which is based on the idea of a guy who is a video gamer and he's a janitor. And there's this video game which is called Biotic Wars, which is apparently completely impossible to beat. And he manages to beat it. The moment he manages to beat it, two people who are in the video game show up in real life, just appear in his room, basically saying, "You've beaten the video game. That means you're the ultimate warrior. We need you to help save the world." It's essentially the sort of setup for it. If you're wondering the type of humor it is, it's exec produced by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, which will give you some idea of the type of language and humor that is going to go into it. They're the people behind Preacher and things like the Sausage Party, the movie. And, you know, so, not exactly highbrow humor in quite a lot of it, but it is extremely funny. I really enjoyed it. It went in a direction I didn't think it was going to go in, because I kind of assumed that with these people coming from the future, they'd be taking him back to the future to sort of help save them. And it doesn't. It actually goes backwards into the past. So I've only seen the first two episodes so far, because I think that's all aired so far. So I've only seen the opening two episodes. It's one that I think I'll be watching the rest of it. You don't get that many US sci-fi comedies. We're starting to get a few more now, but I think this is a great addition to it. It's very kind of different to other stuff out there. I think it was a Hulu series originally, but it's going out on Sci-Fi over here. But that's well worth checking. The other new show this week was A Discovery of Witches, which is on Sky One. It's based on a book series. I don't know the book series particularly. I have to say, I found the opening episode a little bit slow. I mean, it's set in Oxford, and it's based around this sort of research person that comes back to Oxford. She is a witch, and she kind of knows she's a witch, but she's been suppressing all her powers. She is researching the history of alchemy, basically, and pulls out a book from the library, and it seems to sort of infuse into her in some sort of way. And this seems to have an effect on the vampires, which are hiding in and around Oxford as well. So it doesn't really give a whole lot away, and I would have liked to have seen a little bit more kind of story come out in that first episode. At the moment, it's very difficult to know exactly what's going on and where they're going to go with it, but I will keep watching. I've only seen one episode. You can't really judge a show just on that. And it wasn't badly acted or anything. I thought it looked beautiful. beautiful. I thought it was well put together. I just think I would have liked to have, maybe they should have opened it with two episodes rather than one. I wanted to see a little bit more of the story than they put out in that opening episode. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I mean, Discovery of Witches is running on Sky One now, if you want to go and look at that. Gaming wise, Spider-Man, which we have both been playing incessantly. Yep. We've both finished it now, I think.
I platinumed it yesterday.
Oh, well done. Yeah. I've still got a few things that I need to do sort of in terms of sort of cleaning up a few of the prison camps things and a few of the areas.
Oh, the crimes and that.
Crimes and that. So I've still got a few things that I need to do with that. But what I love about that game is it makes it very easy to go and find collectibles and stuff. Things like the backpacks, because there's, for those of you that haven't played, Spider-Man sort of tends to leave his backpack when he changes into his Spidey gear and leaves his backpack stuck to a wall. And I think that was a great invention of the collectibles, was you go around finding the old backpacks which he's forgotten about and left at various places around the city. What I like about it, though, is you're not having to go hunting for this stuff. They show up on the map. So you're not feeling really infuriated by like having to pull up maps online to go and find things like you do with things like GTA. I like the fact that they're there and you can, you know, it makes the collectibles a lot easier to go and find, which I quite like. So it encourages me to kind of go and pick them up while I'm around the city and not sort of not bother with them and then remember about them at the end. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's a great game. It's a really good game, well put together.
This is the best Spider-Man game that's been made. It wasn't a particularly high bar to beat. I mean, there will be with the second one, because this game's going to get a sequel. Especially with what they've set up at the end and during the game and that sort of thing. The weird thing to me with this is I wanted to really take my time with it, but because you're zipping around the city and you're swinging so fast, I always felt like I was rushing the game, because I was just speeding along to the next thing, because I tried to even it up a bit, where I did bit of backpack collecting, bit of story, bit of this and a bit of that. So I would get a backpack on the way to a story mission, but because I was, like I said, zipping through the city so fast, I always felt like I was rushing the game. But no, the story itself is really, really good. It does a great job, obviously, like I said, of setting up the next one. I've heard some rumors about is there an MGU being set up, which would be Marvel Games Universe, because you've got because it hasn't been talked about since its announcement, but Square Enix is making an Avengers game. So if you had different developers with different properties, so you'd have Spider-Man with Insomniac, Square Enix with the Avengers, and then something else with something else, because it wouldn't all be Insomniac. That would be ask them to do, because then Insomniac can focus on a Spider-Man universe, setting up those different characters and doing that sort of thing. And then you could have, I don't know necessarily how crossovers would work, because I'm assuming the Square Enix game would be multi-platform because it would be on everything else. But no, that would be really, really good if they could set that up and stuff. I was very, very impressed with most of the things that they did. Some of the side stuff can be a little bit long, but overall with the gameplay, the story and everything else, they did a very, very good job with it. So
I thought they did a superb job with it. I really enjoyed it. I thought the story was really good. I like the fact that the end credit sequence has two sort of, as you get with the films, it has a mid credit sequence and extra and an end credit sequence extra, which as you say sets up quite a lot of things for games moving forward. So I'm hoping to see more out of them. I'm really impressed. It is one of the best sort of, I think not tying it into the films was probably a good move as well.
This is their own thing.
It's not a direct tie into the film, and I think that's probably a sensible idea. So I would love to see a wider universe of this and them introduce more characters and stuff. I'm very much looking forward to seeing where they go with it. It's a really solid game. And the last thing really is The Predator, which is the new Predator movie, which I went and saw this week. It's awful.
That was what I heard.
It's sort of awful in a B-movie way, though. It's quite a lot of fun, but it is pretty terrible. So don't go in with any high expectations. It's funny. There are some wonderfully silly moments in it. It is quite entertaining. It's not really something I would have usually have gone to the cinema to see. My friend wanted to go and see it, so I kind of said, yeah, fine, we'll go and see Predator. I really didn't have any high expectations going into it, and I think that's how you need to go into it. Don't expect it to be a massively serious film. It's got quite a lot of nice humour in it. The characters are very stereotypical. If you like the Predator stuff, if you like the seriousness of some of the Predator stuff, you're going to absolutely hate it, probably. I think because I went in thinking with a very low bar for this, it didn't annoy me as much as it probably would annoy some people. I'm also not a massive Predator fan. I like the original film. I quite like the second film, actually, but I'm never being sort of somebody that's massively followed the franchise or anything and got massively into it. So, it was entertaining, stupid 2 hours of my life, but I didn't come out of it feeling that I wasted those 2 hours. It was entertaining enough just for sitting and watching a silly film, but it isn't good particularly, you know. It would be worth watching when it comes on for free onto Sky or, you know, Netflix or whatever. It's probably worth watching, but it's not something that I would take particularly seriously. Take it as what it is, which is a very big, dumb, silly film. Speaking of dumb, silly films, the other thing that we were going to talk about while we're here, the DC Extended Universe was, because there's been a lot of stuff floating around about that this week and the DC TV universe as well. And I know we've been talking about it off the podcast. Yeah, we've been having various discussions. First of all, I mean, the story that came out, which is Henry Cavill is not going to be Superman anymore, which has sort of since been denied by his agent. And then he put this really kind of trolling video up, which was him kind of stood there with some music in the background, not saying anything, holding a Spider-Man figure, wearing a Krypton t-shirt. So it's very difficult to know exactly what's going on. It sounds like some people got the wrong end of the stick with the press release, maybe. Well, it wasn't actually a press release. It was a news story that came off one of the industry websites. And the news story on the industry website did say that he's no longer Superman, but it was almost done as a throwaway comment. If you actually read the whole story, what it actually said was DC are not focusing on any more Superman movies right now. They're apparently focusing on the idea of bringing Supergirl to the big screen rather than Superman. And I think part of that is the fact that they had some issues getting Henry to agree to appear in the Shazam film, apparently. That was the story. And now, of course, he's signed on to do the Witcher series, which he's going to be leading in. So I guess his availability is not around as much as it was. So I think that sort of turned them away from making any more kind of Superman stuff. But what it does highlight is what a complete mess the DC Extended Universe is at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when did this thing start? 2013? Man of Steel? Why can't they get their basic trinity together? They did Man of Steel, then they did
Batman v Superman.
Yeah,
then Justice League.
So they did the first intro film, I guess you could say, with one of the main trinity. If you didn't know the trinity, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And then they decided to do a team up with Superman and with Batman, and then introduced Wonder Woman later on in the film. Wonder Woman itself, the film, I thought it was pretty good. It's probably the best out of the five or six or however many there is at the moment of this universe. That's the best film they have. It's the best thing they have going for them. Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. To me, when I look at the DCEU, and I've spoken about this a couple of times on recent podcasts when me and Robert talked about the Batwoman stuff, and when we talked a little bit about Titans, I said to him that, like, the only two characters in this universe in the DCEU that I care about is Batman, which he hasn't even had his solo film of yet, and Wonder Woman. I like Henry Cavill himself. I've got no problem with him. I don't like that version of Superman at all. Suicide Squad was just forgettable and whatever, but Margot Robbie was probably the best thing to take away from, or Margot, however you say her name. If she's getting a solo film, I'm excited to see that, which apparently she is with the Joker or something. But I'm excited to see more of her. We don't need a Suicide Squad 2. That doesn't need to happen. And it's no good to say, like, oh, we're going to focus on Batgirl and Supergirl and all these other stuff, where it's like, okay, you couldn't in the first place get your trinity together, and then you decide to go off and essentially do the female versions of part of the trinity, which is Batgirl and Supergirl. So yeah, to me, Harley Harley Quinn, Batman, and Wonder Woman are the only sort of three that I really care about. I don't know what to do with Aquaman, whether to see that or whether to just watch it and be.
I think
Shazam looks fine. We don't know.
Yeah, Shazam looks fun. I think.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
The rest of it is a mess. So,
we're in a position now where there was that rumored Harley Quinn and Joker movie with Jared Leto playing Joker. They're now in the process of filming a separate Joker movie, which is a Joker origin story, which has Joaquin Phoenix playing Joker.
I mean,
I'm not entirely convinced that you need a Joker origin movie, but it amazes me that they managed to screw this up so badly. And I think part of the reason that they have is because they got very upset about what Marvel was doing and they tried to run before they could walk. What they should have done is started off with Superman movie, a Batman movie, do exactly what Marvel did and introduce each of the characters separately. You know, we shouldn't be getting an Aquaman movie post Justice League. You know, we should
have before Batman anyway.
Yeah, you know, like, and we haven't had a solo Batman movie. I mean, we've had Batman v Superman, but really there should have been a proper Batman movie. And now it's looking like Affleck is not going to come back for the solo Batman film. And we're going to have another Batman in there. That's all very up in the air. Then now it looks like there's not going to be any more Superman films. There is another Wonder Woman film coming, of course.
I'm interested in that Wonder Woman film, like I said. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I don't know what their plan is at this point. Are they completely disconnecting all this universe and just focusing on doing individual films, which I think is fine if they're going to do that, and maybe you do have little bits of crossovers, but I think it's going to get very confusing if you've got like two different people playing Joker, you've got like two different Batmen, you have different Supermen. It makes it just messy, you know?
Yeah.
I don't understand how they could screw this up so badly.
I do generally think they tried to rush to catch up with Marvel, which you can't do because Marvel are years ahead and they've had three Avengers films at this point, and then they said, okay, let's just do Justice League. You can't just do that. So
I think that was a huge mistake. Maybe it's time for them to go back and reset everything. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe you keep, say, Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, but maybe you replace... I mean, see, I like Cavill as Superman. I think Cavill makes a great Superman. If Affleck doesn't want to be Batman anymore, I liked Affleck as Batman, actually, but if he doesn't want to do it, you could quite easily replace him with somebody else. I know John Hamm's been talking about wanting to play it, which I think would be brilliant,
be good.
Actually. Yeah, I actually think that would be great. So, I don't know. Maybe you can do a bit of tweaking with it and start to pull things back together a little bit.
You can work with, certainly. I mean, the next step to me is do a solo Batman film. And then you've kind of got, you know, a bit more there. So
yeah, do a solo Batman film introducing a new Batman. Maybe that's what you do. If Affleck doesn't want to do it, maybe that's how you introduce the new Batman. And you sort of forget all the stuff that's happened prior to now and start again, maybe. I don't know. But just it frustrates me that they've screwed up the movie universe so bad when the TV universe is doing so well, you know?
Yep, I'm very happy with that right now.
There are rumors that there is a new Batgirl TV series coming.
Sounds good to me.
They are very much rumors at the moment. There's been a few stories pop up about the potential of a Batgirl TV series coming to the DC Universe streaming service. Nothing official on that. And I would have thought that if they were going to announce that there was a Batgirl TV series, they probably would have done it on the launch date, or they may do it when they launch Titans. I don't know. But there are rumors that they are thinking about that, because of course they were going to be doing a Batgirl movie, and then Joss Whedon decided he couldn't write the script for it, and then they decided that they should probably have a female director for it anyway, so they've now decided that maybe they'll do a TV. And I can't remember the woman's name. Is it Melissa Rosenberg, who was the showrunner for Jessica Jones, has jumped ship from Marvel to DC. So there are rumors that maybe she is the person that's going to lead a new Batgirl series, which would make sense because she did an amazing job with Jessica Jones. So there is potential there. And it makes sense that it will fit into that Titans universe as well.
Mm.
It
just, yeah, with Robin and stuff.
It's an odd one to put in, considering that they're already kind of looking at a Batwoman series, unless they're looking at this instead of a Batwoman series. But then the Batwoman series is sort of part of the CW universe, not the DCU universe. So you're starting to get a bit of splintering there. The Titan series does look interesting. There was a couple of little mini clips they put up of the Titan series, which were part of, you know, this DC Daily thing that they're doing. That's actually
I've
up
seen
on
bits
YouTube.
And pieces of it. Yeah.
This, which is a sort of chat show around all things DC. You can find them up on YouTube, but on the last one of those they did, they actually put a little clip of Titans, which was lovely. It was Dick Grayson talking to Jason Todd as they went up in an elevator, and Jason's going, "How can you not like this job? How could you leave? This is being Robin's the best job in the world, you know. We get to go out, we get to fight crime, we get to drive the Batmobile," and like Dick just looks at him going, "He lets you drive the Batmobile?" it's just lovely. They look really good. I'm so looking forward to that series. Again, we don't know what's happening with that internationally. The only thing they're saying at the moment is that they're focusing on the US right now. That's all they'll say. I think that's a mistake. I think not announcing what you're going to do internationally with these shows. I think if you don't release them at the same time all over the world, that Titan series is going to get pirated to death by people.
Yeah.
It just is. People will go looking for it online. I mean, you know, don't do that, but people will, you know. I mean, there was talk at one point about them maybe bringing it to Netflix if they're not going to launch DCU outside of the US, but that, again, that's a rumor, so don't know whether that's true or not, or if that's going to happen. I mean, it would make sense. It would give them, if they are going to be waiting like 2 years before they set something up outside, if there is going to be a long extended period, it would make sense to sell those shows to an existing streaming platform on a limited sort of, you can have this for a year or you can have this for 2 years until we sort out what we're going to do internationally with DCU. That would make sense to me, because at least then people aren't going to end up stealing it. Whether they'll do that, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to leave it hanging for the international audience, because people will just go and find it somewhere. I mean, I don't know if you've got anything else you want to add to this, but
I'm just very excited for the future of DC TV.
Yes.
In general. I know there's different bits
not
and
so
pieces
much the
and
movie,
stuff. But...
Not so much the movie universe, but yes, definitely the TV universe. Yes, yeah, the movie universe is a mess at the moment. We'll have to see what happens. With that out of the way, let's move on to some TV and film news.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So we kick off the TV and film news this week, as ever, with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. One of the first stories we've got is Lethal Weapon Season 3. It's become apparent that ITV have not yet picked up the rights for it. The third season of Lethal Weapon, obviously, hasn't got Glenn Crawford in it. They've got Sean William Scott in as the replacement. Because of that, ITV are waiting to see how the first episodes go out in the US and what the reaction is to it, and whether they're any good or not, before they negotiate a deal for the license, because their initial deal was only for the first two seasons. So the third season doesn't yet have a home, but ITV has first refusal on buying it. So it will likely be on ITV if it's any good. If it isn't any good, it could end up anywhere, but then you might not want to see it. So we'll see. Other shows coming back. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire is returning with Jeremy Clarkson as the host for a 10-episode series. This is after Clarkson stepped in to do those specials, I think, earlier this year, I think it was, or might have been end of last year. They did some specials for the sort of anniversary of it, but they're now bringing it back for a new series. So there's 10 episodes of that. His Dark Materials, which is the Philip Pullman, based on the Philip Pullman book, and it's been made by Bad Wolf and the BBC. HBO has also signed on to that as well. And they've upped it from being one season to two seasons since HBO have signed on. So if you're a fan of those books, then you're going to get a lot of that coming up. And Virgin announced that they've launched a new Ultra HD channel, which is an odd mix of sort of rerun shows that have been on other places like Masters of Sex, House of Cards, Startup. They have got a few original series that haven't aired anywhere else. Or I say original series, they're like Hulu shows that haven't aired over here before, like Shut Eye and things like, and The Art of More. So they have got a few series which haven't aired anywhere else, which will be exclusive, but only you'll only be able to watch them if you've got Virgin, which is a bit of a pain. But what can you do? You know, so they've got to have some exclusives to themselves. So that is launching this week. If you are a Virgin customer, you'll find a new channel. If you haven't got an Ultra HD system, it will downgrade it to normal HD for you. So you can still watch the Ultra HD channel. It's just it's going to not be an Ultra HD. Mm-hmm. Other news we've got this week, Grimstar Elizabeth Tulloch is playing Lois Lane in the Arrowverse, and they've also announced nepotism is alive and well as Stephen Amell's wife is joining the show, as well as Cassandra Jean Amell is joining as Nora Freeze. I mean, we knew Lois Lane was going to come into the show. Elizabeth Tulloch, you'll know from Grimm, she played Juliet, who was the girlfriend of Nick in four seasons of that, before she kind of got killed off-ish. Sorry, spoilers for if you've not watched Grimm, but, you know, it's been a while. So she got killed off and then became a new character called Eve on that show. So you'll know from that. Lois Lane, of course, you know, girlfriend of Superman, and we know she's going to turn up in the crossover series, which will also have Tyler Hoechlin back as Superman slash Clark Kent in that crossover as well. Cassandra Jean Amell is playing the role of Nora Freeze. Nora Freeze is the kind of wife of Victor Freeze, aka Mr. Freeze. We don't know exactly how they're going to use her in this, whether she'll be up and walking around or whether she's just going to be in some sort of cryostasis pod, which is how we traditionally have seen her. I mean, the history of that character has varied depending on whether you watch the TV show, film, whether it's you know what era of the comic book you've looked at. The traditional basic setup of it is that she had a terminal illness. Victor Freeze, who is her husband, puts her in a cryostasis pod to stop the terminal illness while he tries and finds a cure. There is an explosion in the lab which damages the pod, apparently killing her, and then turns Victor into Mr. Freeze. That's the sort of basic background of that character. There have been other versions of her where she's kind of ended up becoming a supervillain herself and wasn't killed when the pod exploded, and or she's been like resurrected using a Lazarus pit in one version of the history. So there's various ways that they could use that character. So it could be based on one of those, it could be none of those. We don't know yet. Cassandra Jean Amell has started a career on America's Next Top Model. She's had guest roles in things like One Tree Hill, Heart of Dixie, and Mad Men. So I don't know her as an actress at all, but yes, I think it's fair to say one of the reasons she got the role is because her husband plays Arrow in the show. So
yeah.
I certainly think Elizabeth Tulloch's a great bit of casting for Lois Lane. I can definitely see her doing that. Did you watch Grimm? I don't know whether you ever saw that show.
No, I've not seen it before.
Yeah, no. She's I can see her as Lois Lane. I think she's a really good pick for that role.
Like I said before, just they continue to add to a universe that's already been built up, because the characters that we have so far, you know, Arrow, Flash, Legend, Supergirl, we all know those characters already, because, you know, they've had years to be on TV. And I know that, like, you know, a 23-episode season doesn't compare to a 2-hour film, but like they've just, over the years, they've just continued to slowly add characters, and with them adding two quite interesting characters with Lois Lane and Mr. Freeze's wife.
Nora Freeze.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting what they do with Nora, because if Mr. Freeze isn't going to be around, which I assume he isn't.
No, he's not.
What exactly her role is going to be, and like you said, what state she's going to be in, because I remember in, I think it was the Batman Arkham games, there was a DLC with Mr. Freeze, or there was something like that. And she was in the injured state, I suppose you could say. She was in the cryo thing, and of course the focus on the game was you doing the boss battle against Mr. Freeze. So I do wonder what they have lined up for her, but then again, because they've done a good job of what they've done in the past, I trust them to come up with something good.
Yeah.
And in terms of Lois Lane and Superman, because that character's been a bit more absent, and that's actually a version of Superman that I really like, I would like to see more of him and more of this new version of Lois. It just depends where they're going to go with those characters, because I don't think you can do a seventh show. Because they got if they do decide to do this Batwoman series, that's six shows, and then if they decide, you know, that Superman's gonna have his own series, that's seven, and it's like, how do you schedule all of that? And it's good that we've got all that good TV and stuff, but like, how do you manage it all? Like I said, I would be happy to see more of that version of Superman and this new version of Lois Lane, and like obviously have them together in stories. But it's like, what do you do with all that stuff?
So, I mean, I don't think there is a Superman series incoming anytime soon, because he's just signed on to a Netflix show, so he's one of the co-stars in a new Netflix series. The Netflix show is a sci-fi series, and it's one of those that I think they could kill characters off fairly easily, so I don't know whether it's going to be like a one season thing for him or whether he's going to be there permanently, but it's difficult to say, but I don't think, it's certainly not likely to come this season if they're going to do Superman, and I'm not sure whether they want to do a Superman series if they've already got a Supergirl series. I do like that character.
Unless they add him as a recurring role on Supergirl, because they kind of already had that, and then he just left, and I was happy with what they did with him. Plus then you could add Lois, and I mean, you've got 23 episodes, so it's not like you have a shortage of time.
No.
So you could do something interesting there, and I'm not expecting him to like have equal screen time, or certainly not more, because it's still Supergirl's show, but they could certainly add him as a recurring character or something like that. So we'll see. But at the moment we have this crossover to look forward to, which already has the Batwoman stuff that I'm interested in, so yeah, looks good.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'd like to say, we don't know what's going to happen with Nora Freeze, because one thing they have said is Victor, i.e. Mr. Freeze, will not be in it. Well, they've said Mr. Freeze won't be in it. I do wonder whether that's a misdirect and whether Victor may show up at some point. Oh, but they've said that Mr. Freeze certainly won't be in it. So we'll have to see. It could be pre her meeting him, of course. We don't know. So we'll have to wait and see what they're going to do. It's an interesting character to pick up because she's so closely tied with Victor in that world. So we'll see what they do. But interesting bit of announcement that. Moving on to another show, 13 Reasons Why star Catherine Langford has joined the Netflix series Cursed, which comes from Frank Miller and Tom Wheeler. Cursed is a reimagining of the Arthurian legend told through the eyes of Nimue, who is the teenage heroine with a mysterious gift who is destined to become the powerful and tragic Lady of the Lake. So it's almost like a sort of prequel to the Arthurian legend. It follows Nimue, who goes on to be the watery tarp with the sword, as they talk about in Monty Python. You can't set up a system of government based on a watery tarp throwing a sword at you, is the comment, I think, something along those lines. But yes, so she ends up becoming Lady of the Lake, but it's sort of a history of her. It's based around her. Interestingly, they're actually writing a book that goes along with the TV series and will really be released at the same time. So there is a book. No, it's not entirely clear whether it's a comic book or whether it's a book with illustrations done by Frank Miller, because they're describing it as a book with illustrations. They're not describing it as a comic book. They're describing it as a young adult companion book. So I'm still not 100% clear on whether it's going to be a full-blown comic book or whether it's going to be a book with a bunch of illustrations in it. Frank Miller, of course, is the person behind things like Dark Knight Returns, Sin City 300. Tom Wheeler is the writer-producer behind films like Puss in Boots, the Lego Ninjago movie, the TV series The Cape as well. So, it's an interesting kind of mix of people. And I think the Arthurian legend stuff is always fun to play around in. I mean, Catherine Langford was great as Hannah Baker, Got a Golden Globe.
Yeah, she was
for
fantastic.
That, you know, in 13
Did she?
Reasons
Oh,
why.
That's good.
Yeah, she won a Golden Globe for 13 Reasons Why.
Good, she deserves that.
Yeah, totally deserves it. She's she also popped up in the Netflix series Love, Simon, and has been voicing characters on Robot Chicken as well since she did 13 Reasons. But yeah, I mean, I've not watched the second season of 13 Reasons, but the first season I thought was superb. I really enjoyed that.
So yeah, I'm more excited to see more of Catherine Langford, because I remember when I finished season two of 13 Reasons Why, and obviously she's not going to be in season three, which it did get renewed for.
Yes.
They did a great job of sending off the character and stuff, so I'm excited to see what she's in next. And then this popped up, so I was happy with that. I didn't know about the other stuff you mentioned just a minute ago. I think the guy that played as Clay did a good job as well, but yeah. I think Hannah, Catherine herself, the best that the series had. It'd be good to see some more of her. So I know a lot of people see 13 Reasons Why as a really controversial thing, and it's very tough to watch. I could agree with that, and the issues surrounding it are very tough, and I know about that and stuff. But I thought the second season of 13 Reasons Why was really good. I thought it was a really good continuation, and I like where, because when we went into season two and not necessarily knowing if they were going to do a third season, I was wondering where exactly they were going to go. Because I remember when it was renewed for a second season, everybody thought, okay, you did the 13 Reasons, but they did a really good job with the continuation for that. And I kind of got really invested with the characters. And then I'm excited to see what they do with season three.
I will go and watch the second season. I've just got to be in the right frame of mind for it.
You do have to, yeah. You can't just sit there and just binge it or whatever.
Yeah. And lastly, we've got news that Aaron Paul, the star of Breaking Bad, will be joining Westworld for its third season, apparently.
He's a host.
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know. Presumably he's not a host. I mean, we don't know for a fact. This being Westworld and being very secretive, of course, we have no idea who he's actually playing.
Right.
The second season obviously ended, sorry, spoilers if you haven't seen the second season, but the second season does end with the host getting out of the park. So that opens up the world to them, you know. There are a myriad of ways you could introduce new characters to this. So whether he's just a normal Joe that ends up interacting with the hosts, whether he's something more than that, we have no idea at this point what he's going to be. But I love Aaron Paul. He was amazing in Breaking Bad, and things I've seen him in since. He's been the Hulu series The Path he was in as well, which I haven't actually watched yet, but that's on Amazon Prime.
He voices Todd in BoJack Horseman.
He does. He voices various characters into BoJack Horseman, I think, actually. But
Is it Mr. Robot? Rami Malek, he's in this new season of BoJack as well.
Oh, right, so, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yes. Soon to be seen playing Freddie Mercury as well. I think he's a great addition to the show. It's going to be very interesting to see him. Mm. He's also starring in the Apple anthology series Are You Sleeping, which is based on a novel by Kathleen Barber, which is a sort of true crime anthology series based on people's obsession with true crime and podcasts and stuff. So he actually plays a sort of podcast/journalist in that, but it's an anthology series, so everybody involved in it is only signed up for one season at a time, so that leaves him open to go and be in Westworld as well. But it's not the first Breaking Bad character to go in Westworld, because Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Gus, he was like in for one scene. Had a very brief cameo in the first season. Presumably that Aaron Paul's going to be in for a bit longer in the third season. It'd
be good to see Aaron Paul again, and I mean see him, because obviously he voices a character in BoJack. I didn't see The Path or anything else he's really been in, and I heard that The Path was cancelled anyway, which is unfortunate. Hopefully in probably 2020 when this comes back, it'd be good to see him again and see what he brings to the table of Westworld and what they give him to do and what exactly he is going to be. So that would be exciting.
Yes. It's probably going to be spring 2020 before we see that show.
Probably April, yeah.
It will probably go into the sort of Game of Thrones slot the year after Game of Thrones finishes, because they are alternating at the moment. And presumably that will lead to the Game of Thrones spin-off, assuming that gets picked up, being in 2021. And then the fourth season of Westworld, if there is one, will be 2022. So it's crazy.
Yeah.
But yes, so spring 2020 for next season of Westworld. Seems a long way off.
It does, yeah. Hey, we got True Detective in January.
So. Yes, yes, we have for True Detective. It's not as if we're short of TV shows to watch right now. So. No. And it's only going to get worse. So that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have an interview. So the interview this week is with the Academy Award-winning composer Federico Justid. He's originally from Argentina, best known for scoring the award-winning Best Foreign Language film, The Secrets in Their Eyes, for which he won Best Music Award from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences in Argentina. He recently scored the Spanish drama Loving Pablo, starring Javier Bardem and Penelope Cruz. In 2016, Federico was recognized as Composer of the Year by the Spanish Music Critics Association. He won 5 International Music Critics Association awards for his music on the Spanish historical fiction series Isabel Carlos Rey Empatura, if I'm saying that right. Recently completed the emotional and moving score for This Is Us creator Dan Fogelman's upcoming film Life Itself, starring Olivia Wilde and Oscar Isaac. Premieres in the US on September 21st. UK release for it is in January 2019. So we talk a little bit about that. We talk about a few other projects he's working on as well at the moment. Watership Down, animated TV show, is one thing he's working on at the moment. Really, really nice guy. Although he's from Argentina, sort of based in LA and Spain. So I think he was in Spain when we were talking to him. Here's the interview with Federico. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Hi, Federico. Are you in LA at the moment?
No, right now I'm in Spain. I'm in Madrid.
Oh, okay.
I just came a couple of weeks ago. I'm wrapping this project that actually I think you would love, at least the project, if not the music. This is Watership Down.
Oh, cool.
Yes, yes. And this is a remake that they're doing. They're doing 4 episodes for the BBC.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And Netflix, yes. Animation as well, like the film in the 70s. And I'm lucky enough to be the composer for this, which is a blast. I mean, for any composer, you know, scoring for an animation and scoring for this piece, which is great.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. So is that the first time you've done animation?
It's the first time I do such wonderful and serious project of animation. I've done a little animation before. I've done a show in Spain, and then I've done a film that was, the protagonist was a dog. So it was a long time ago. And so that was like doing animation, because it had the vibe and the type of musical language of an animation film, but this is probably my first big animation feature, and I hope it's not the last, because I'm enjoying it so much.
Aww.
Really, really, really. So let's see.
That's cool.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. We're mixing 104 cues.
Wow.
Right now, yes.
That's a crazy amount of cues. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I mean, you split quite a lot of your time between Spain and LA, don't you? So
absolutely. I've been starting this jumping back and forth about 5 years ago, and now I spend, I'd say, 80% of my time in LA.
Right.
But I come every 2 months. I try to spend a week in Madrid. And my house here, I have a studio, my office, a crew here, and I keep doing European projects. So
right.
Although I might then take my homework and bring it home to my LA home, I'm still like old school, and I like to meet with the directors, the filmmakers in person when it's possible.
Yeah.
At least a few times in the project, and then of course we go on online, we Skype, you know, every other day if necessary. But there's a moment, especially at the beginning, where, you know, I can sit at the piano and have my director around and talk about music, and for that, internet is not, it doesn't have anything to substitute for that.
Yeah, no, it's always better to try and do it in person if you can, of course.
If possible, yeah, absolutely.
So you're back in Spain. You're not from either country originally. You're from,
no.
You're from Argentina. So
exactly.
How did you end up getting into the sort of industry in the first place, and end up sort of from Argentina into sort of Spain and LA then?
Well, first of all, in the industry, I think it was quite a natural thing for me. I mean, at least in the industry in my country, I was born in Argentina in a family of filmmakers, of film workers. My father is a film director in Argentina who keeps filming. And he's 77. He just did a film last year. And then my mom is an actress and my aunt is an art director. My sister is a sonographer. So film was a very, and theater, it was something very familiar to me. But since I was 5 or 6, I started playing the piano and I was sent to a fantastic teacher. So I always knew music was my thing, but it was very natural to me to be waiting for my father at the Moviola back then, you know, the old Avid, and trying things. You know, I remember myself playing with the waste material, you know, grabbing from the basket pieces of 35 millimeters and put them together, you know, doing my little short films,
yeah,
like recycling material. And so in a way I would understand how the construction of a film is because I would be there all the time or accompanying my dad to the shooting or to the rehearsals. So slowly, as I was studying composition and writing little pieces for the concert hall and all that, I would perhaps help my dad's composers at their studios at the beginning, just of course serving coffee and doing Xeroxes and then slowly helping out with little arrangements perhaps or writing additional music. So at the same time, as I was learning like the more formal aspects of music at the conservatory, at the academy, I was learning about the real life of film scoring at different studios. So that was my childhood. And then when I was 20, I started traveling and I was lucky enough to get scholarships to do a master's degree, which I did in New York. I did my master's in New York in Manhattan School of Music. And then I started traveling and performing because I'm a classical concert pianist. And I was doing that as well as writing. And then my mother always told me, and I'm very thankful for that. She said, you know, if you want to be a serious musician, just go, you know, leave this country, travel, learn. And then, of course, you can come back whenever you want. But if you want to do that for real, you want to go and see where it's done very seriously in the world. So, and that's basically what I did. And although I go back to Argentina every year to see my family, well, my career took off in Spain. And now in luckily slowly, but it's happening in LA as well. So that's where I'm spending most of my time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, looking through your film and TV credits, I mean, a lot of the stuff is what we would refer to as foreign language films, but obviously foreign language as far as you're concerned.
For me, it's not. Yeah. No.
There's a lot of stuff which are obviously Spanish language things and that sort of thing. The Layers project, though, this is a thing for Dan Fogelman, who's the creator of This Is Us, which is an incredible series. It's called Life Itself, Livia Wilde and Oscar Isaac. How did that come about?
Well, it's funny because they were, first of all, I think they were looking for some Spanish flavor because a part of the story happens in Spain.
Right.
Part of the story happens in New York, part of the story happens in Spain. So the music supervisor of the project had known me for quite a bit already, although we haven't had the chance to work together, but she knew about me and she knew about my work. And when they said, yeah, Spanish flavored, I guess she said, oh, I know this guy. And I remember I was working on a film in Europe and she reached out and she said, you know, can you send some music? So my agent sent some music. And I was very lucky to have my music spread in the temp track of the film, which is the most fortunate thing that can happen to you because that's something that gets attached to the director's ears and they liked those pieces. And then after that, they asked me to make a few arrangements of a Bob Dylan song because Dan, you know, if you saw this. Is us, Dan's language is quite pop, right? It's quite, I mean, I think his language in general, not only regarding music, but there's something very direct, very informal.
Yeah.
And then since, of course, I guess they knew about my like classical background, they were, you know, wondering if I could like do something a little bit more in this vein. And so they asked me to make a few arrangements on Make You Feel My Love, the Bob Dylan song. Mm. And they said, very, very, very simple, just one piano arrangement. And if you have the chance, you have the time, just make something could sound more Spanish. So I made a few piano arrangements, and then I wrote a couple of Spanish guitar arrangements. I sent, you know, the mock-ups and the score to a wonderful musician that I work with sometimes in Spain, so that I would have the real guitar. And he did a wonderful job. And we sent those mock-ups. And then, to be honest, I kind of forgot about it, because very often in my career that happens. You know, they ask me for a demo or a mock-up or something, and then, you know, real life brings different things. Sometimes they need a different composer for co-production reason or whatever. So I kind of forgot, or just parked it in the back of my mind. And a few months later, they reached out again and they say, "Oh, Dan wants to meet you." And I had a meeting with him, and he was great. And he was liking a lot all the pieces. And then he showed me the film, and all my arrangements plus pieces from my reel was spread in the movie, which is absolutely fortunate. So that was a very good start. And the score is not a pop score, but it does have a pop flavor to it. Like do use an orchestra, I do use a string orchestra, but it doesn't sound like most of my scores, you know, with a lot of sweeps and counterpoint, but it sounds like a sophisticated accompaniment of a singer.
It's interesting. We interviewed Siddhartha Khosla a few weeks ago, who obviously does This Is Us as well.
Completely,
I know exactly what you mean about that sort of pop sensibility with that sort of stuff, because I know how much Dan likes that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like a really interesting project. That, where do you start when you're approaching a project? Is it always piano you start with, or is it sort of...
Well, first of all, I try to understand, and this is the most, to me, difficult question to answer, to respond, that is, what's music going to do in the project I'm working on? What's the mission, or what's the function, or what's the role of the music in that particular project, which changes from one project to the other? And especially if you are lucky enough to be working on US projects and then now on UK projects and Peruvian projects and in Spanish projects, which the use of the music varies quite a bit. So that first thing is to understand, you know, in this case, for instance, working with Dan, what is he expecting from music, and what could sound familiar to his language, so that within my repertoire, if you want, or within my sensibility, you know, I always try to relate to the idiom and the language as the style of each director, as opposed to bring my own style to each film, because that would, to me, would be a less interesting exercise in film scoring. Mm. So once I kind of start responding to that question, I compose, my first pieces are either at the piano or just without an instrument. You know, I would just be walking, or be always the first days or weeks I'm working on a project, I'm always like kind of here, but at the same time I'm writing and you know, bubbling things and trying to figure out what to do. And then I start writing on paper directly.
Yeah.
After that, after I have a bunch of pieces or a bunch of ideas, then after that, I go to workstation and I start recording little sketches or doing little edits to see in counterpoint with different sections of the film to see how that works. But I try not to start at the computer, to be honest. Not because it's worse, but to me, it's more natural to start on paper directly or on the piano. I find that my ideas tend to be more creative outside the box, outside the computer, and they tend to be a little bit more square when I'm at the sitting at the Logic or at the Pro Tools.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you mentioned computers there. Are you going for live instruments as much as possible, or are you using samples on things? I mean, I would think with your style of music, you're probably air towards live instruments, assuming the project can afford it, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think all the projects can afford live instruments. Like, of course, all not all projects can afford an entire orchestra.
Yeah.
But I think you, as composers, I think we always have to be not lazy enough to record as much as we can, because there are some projects. Listen, I do a lot of small budget films.
Yeah.
Not only because I come from Argentina, but because I keep working for South American cinema, because I find it super interesting, super stimulating, and because there are a lot of things done there that I don't find in a lot of US films. So I find that very, you know, artistic challenge. So I do know what not having a budget is, but in the same way John Cage came up with a prepared piano when he had to score for a dance and he didn't have an orchestra, and he said, well, I'm going to, you know, use this prepared piano and put some bolts and screws here to have a little orchestra. I think we can come up with ideas, you know, and especially nowadays where you can record a cello and then you can process it, and then you can do a lot of sound interesting modifications and manipulations to get a beautiful palette, but coming out of a real thing to me, and perhaps, as you say, as because of my education or my ground, it's very important to have an acoustic source.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I, as much as I can, I do use real instruments. And then, of course, you do. I've done, you know, a few sci-fi films. Now, there was an album, I think, coming out 2 months ago from Orbiter 9, which is a sci-fi film, mostly a sci-fi film. But still in that film, we created sounds for that film. You know, we recorded things and then we load them in our computer. And although there are synths, there are a lot of real sounds. I can hear in my piano being banged with a, you know, with a little hammer or with a with a rubber. So I think there's always room for that. And to me, it gives kind of an organic quality that I can not find in the other world.
Yeah, that sort of tends to be stuff which hasn't already been recorded by somebody else, which is exactly what you want.
Exactly.
I'll finish with my final two questions. The first question would be, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
That's a shame, because I'm running behind so much. So much.
And it's a shame because
it's terrible, because I work on this industry and I meet my friends and they go, oh, have you watched the last season of, you know, the last show? And I'm still watching the first season of Handmaid's Tale. That's how, you know, behind I am. So, yes.
You wouldn't believe how common it is for people, particularly like the composers that are working so solidly, that how often they don't get a chance to watch things.
Absolutely. And then I'm going to say something. I hope it doesn't sound hideous to you. And then after, you know, days of 18 hours of working, one after the other, weeks after the other, I want to go to the theater. I want to go listen to opera. I want to read. Yeah. I'm not listening to film scores much, you know. Yeah. I am, but not. I need something else. I need to drink from different, you know, fountains.
We hear that as well. Yeah. Don't worry, you're not the first person
to say that.
Okay,
I'm glad.
So, there are quite a lot of people that are just like, I need to get away from it and you know, not deal with that stuff. So finally, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present or future, what show would it be?
Mamma mia, you caught me completely on guard.
This one always stumps
listen,
people.
I'm going to say something that's going to sound so bad, but I hope I can work in Watership Down. I hope there's a show. They make a sequel out of this show you know, 75 episodes, and I can work on something like that, because the canvas for expression, not only because it's animation, but because the text, and you know the text because it's it's so wonderful. And listening to this, you know, as you know, English is not my first language, but I can still appreciate, you know, that text, that sophistication, and this level of performance that I hope they make this into a show and they still call me, and, you know, that I don't get fired after working for these four episodes and they relapse and they call me and I can keep doing this because I'm learning so much on it.
Awesome. More animated rabbits. That's what you want.
Yes, more.
Brilliant. Well, it's been lovely talking to you. I let you get back to your watership down composing.
I will. Thank you so much. Thanks. You for your interest.
Great. Thanks. Bye.
I did. Be well.
Bye. So that was the interview with Federico. Hope you enjoyed that. The movie Life Itself is premiering September 21st in the US. UK releases in January next year. Now we got some highlights for next week on TV. So only a few things coming for next week on TV. We've got The Good Cop, which is a comedy drama from the creator of Monk. Stars Tony Danza and Josh Groban are the two leads in this. The singer, Josh Groban, who is also an actor. 21st of September, this arrives. Basically, this father and son cop team, it's a sort of odd couple-y type comedy where the dad is this sort of rule-breaking retired NYPD officer and his son is a very straight-shooting detective. I've seen a few clips of it. It looks very funny. So I think could be quite entertaining. Called The Good Cop. Starts on Netflix on the 21st of September. That. Maniac, which is this new series, it's mini season, starts 21st of September as well. Stars Emma Stone and Jonah Hill as two people in a 3-day drug trial which promises no complications or side effect whatsoever. Things don't quite go as planned. looks very strange show, yeah, this. Yes, looks particularly weird if you've seen any trailers for this. Could be very entertaining. It's called Maniac, that 21st of September for that. Mystery Road comes to BBC Four on 22nd of September at 9 p.m. It's an Australian cop drama set in a remote outback town. I think it's got a couple of seasons in the bag already for this. I think it's coming back for another one. So if you like cop dramas, that's another one. It's quite a good week for cop dramas. That's on the 22nd of September at 9 p.m. Mystery Road, that's called. And then Black Sails comes to the History Channel for its fourth season, which I think ended a while ago on Amazon, but this is its first TV broadcast. So this is the pirate drama from Michael Bay. I've seen a few episodes of this. It was very good. It's one of those that I just never got around to going back to. 25th of September at 9 p.m. That's arriving. That's Black Sails to the History Channel. And that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to put in.
Yeah, we're on the verge of having some really good shows coming back. The DC shows are coming back in a little bit. The Walking Dead is The Good Place, which I'm very, very excited for.
Yes.
Comes back soon as well. I did a preview podcast for that a little while ago, a few weeks ago. I just couldn't wait any longer. I just wanted to do it. But yeah, that was pretty good as well. They've released the first few minutes on
I saw
on
that.
YouTube.
I haven't actually watched it, but I'm so looking forward.
I watched it.
I'm so looking forward to that. 28th of September, The Good Place arrives on Netflix for season 3, and yes. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah.
And you can follow me on Twitter at eTalkUK.
Yes, so. Go follow Matt. For us, you can find us obviously at geektown.co.uk throughout the week. If you want to see all the latest news and air date information, there is a lot of stuff going up daily on there. So keep checking the UK air dates page.
That part of the year. So.
Yes, we are in that part of the year. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's all for this week. If you're at EGX over the weekend, I will be around, and so will Bex. If you want to come and find either of us, I think Bex is on one of the stalls helping a friend out. So come and say hello to either of us. We will be about at EGX in Birmingham if you want to come and find us. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.